it's Madge here, and I have a little bit of a change of pace. We're going to have a more serious discussion. My guest today is Raymond Christensen, who you may remember. You may remember from years ago. He was involved with the beginning of the video blogging movement before YouTube ate it and vomited it into some, you know, basically fat people singing. And anyway, Raymond has a personal story to tell and related to the recent hostage situation, and we want to also bring that into the more the big picture. So here's Raymond's.
Hi, Matt. Long time no hear. I've been following your show. I still remember Vlog Europe 06, I think it was, in Italy, and the impression you made at the, what was it, the Lake Como?
Yes, Como, yeah.
It was great. Anyway, so yeah, personal side of the story. On January 16th, I received a message on my cell phone that there was a hostage situation in Algeria. And I was at work, just had my lunch break, and then I read the news. I have sort of push messages on my phone. And the first 2 or 3 seconds, it was like, oh yeah, okay, a hostage situation in Algeria. And then suddenly it was like, oh my God, my uncle. Because I knew that my uncle has been working in Algeria for the Norwegian oil company for some years. And then I asked my aunt, you know, he's safe, right? Because the way it works in Norway, at least, is that you work for 2 or 3 weeks, and then you have 3 or 4 weeks off. So you have sort of, while you're working all the time. And then she replied, no comment. And then I realized, okay, so he's not safe. And then I called the Statoil, next of kin number, and they told me that yes, he is involved, but they couldn't give in more information. And then, basically, because of this, because of his relations with my cousin, which is a minister, part of the Norwegian government, we couldn't sort of have the names out while the hostage situation was ongoing. So there was no mentioning of the names of the hostages in the Norwegian media. And also I and others were told to be really careful about, you know, giving that information out. So I couldn't, you know, really tweet or Facebook or anything about this more than sort of a casual interest in it, because it was, you know, pretty tight security situation with this. Then on Sunday, on the next Sunday, I think it was on the, let me see now, the 20th. That night, the names were published, and then they had 5 missing Norwegians, of course, as well as some from Britain, some from Japan, and so on. And then during the next days, confirmed deaths appeared. And on Friday, 2 days ago, it was confirmed that my uncle is among the deceased. So the situation now from a Norwegian perspective is that 4 out of 5 missing are confirmed dead. We are still looking for the last one.
Mm-hmm. What, from what I was reading just before I called you, there were part of the reason that they weren't telling how many people were there was because some of them were still hiding, like that there were several hostages that had already been taken, and then there were some that were hiding.
Yes, correct.
Still.
Some of them were hiding. I think there was at least one guy from Romania who was hiding in the offices. And I think that situation is part of the reason why also the numbers of hostages was really unclear in the media.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you also have sort of the fog of war, where it was really hard to get information out of there, because basically the Algerian authorities, as far as I understand it, was really restrictive with who, you know, what journalists they allowed to be on the site,
mm-hmm,
or outside the site while it happened. So, you know, on Thursday, on day 2 of the hostage situation, there was an attack on 5 vehicles by the Algerian army. And we hear things like they used helicopters and they used rockets, and they used those rockets to attack those cars. 4 out of those cars burst into flames, and the last one didn't. And one Irish guy and a guy from the Philippines was survivors from that last car. They were hostages from that last car. Mm-hmm. So, this situation was really frustrating also for me, because there were so many rumors, among them rumors from the ANI, Mauritanian press agency, who sort of at least sometimes acted like a mouthspeak for the terrorists. So, you know, a lot of misinformation out there, unfortunately.
So what I don't really understand is, aside from the details of the attack, why this was caused by, this was some sort of retaliation for the attack on Mali by France.
Well, that's what the terrorists say.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you look at it, you know, from a sort of a logistics point of view, mm-hmm. there's no way that could be the reason, because according to information that has appeared lately, this operation has been planned for at least 2 months. It was just, you know, 1 week before this happened that the French army intervened in Mali. So that was just a nice excuse to have.
So what was the real reason then?
We don't know. Mm-hmm. We know that Al-Qaeda in Maghreb, the AQIM, they wanted to have more visibility. We know that the Belmokhtar guy, who says that he, you know, is the guy behind this, he split from the AQIM in December, this last month. Mm-hmm. And according to some news reports, he said back then that he would focus on hostage situations and targeting foreigners. But there are so many questions, you know, why did this really happen? And I think for me, at the end of the day, it's just terrorism. I don't think they really need to have a really good reason behind it, besides, you know, saying, French troops in Mali is a good one. The blind Sheikh, he was arrested in the U.S. for some terrorist attack, and they wanted him to be freed. They also want some others to be freed. They could have all kinds of reasons, reasoning in their mind for doing this, but in my opinion, that's just bullshit.
Well, I don't really see when they were actually used. I mean, they call it them hostages, but at what point were they actually used as hostages, which is where you say, okay, these hostages are going to die unless you do what we say. And I missed that part. Where was that?
It started already on Wednesday, when they said that they wanted, first of all, France to go out of Mali, because what the Islamists are doing, have been doing in Mali since last year, is to spread their area of influence in northern Mali and then move towards the capital. Mm-hmm. Then sometime last year, I think France and some other countries, maybe African Union countries, they strengthened the defense of the capital. Mm-hmm. So the Islamists were contained, so to speak, in northern Mali. But the way that the borders work in the Sahara Desert, the borders are really vague. So, you know, there's not much security there. So the terrorists could go from Libya to Algeria to Mali and back and forth without really being stopped. So the guy who has claimed responsibility for this, he has, you know, is known as Mr. Marlboro, because he's, you know, made a fortune before on smuggling cigarettes across borders.
You say it's just terrorism. Is that sort of like just sort of a almost like a pathological thing, like being a sociopath or a serial killer, or is there some reason for it that? Yeah, I don't understand that.
Well, I don't have the link right now, but in the video that Belmokhtar published a few days ago, where he claims responsibility. He says that this is in retaliation for the crusading powers, and he does play the Mali card a lot. So you could say that yes, this is because he saw ahead and predicted that France would sooner or later do something in Mali, because yeah. France also has interests in Northern Africa. You could say that, you know, this was just a well-planned out response to that. But in my point of view, to be honest, when, you know, anyone, guys behind 9/11, guys behind the Madrid bombings, the London bombings, the guy behind the 22nd of July thing here in Norway in 2011, you know, where this maniac first bombed Oslo and then killed 80 youths on the island. I think it's a pathological thing, to be honest. But it's really, really convenient to use whatever thing they could use the link is. I'm not saying there's no ideological link. I think there is an ideological link, both for, you know, 9/11, Madrid, London, Utøya in 2011, and now this. Of course, there's some, because, you know, even if you are mentally something, you find excuses, you find ways to justify killing people, killing innocent people to yourself. But in my point of view, it doesn't work that way. Because, and the reason why this is touching me so personally, so badly is, you know, I remember 9/11. I think you do as well.
Sure.
I remember the shock of seeing evil, as in no empathy at all with the lives of other people. Like, kill 3,000 people, justified, because we want to give the West a message that they shouldn't go into the Holy Land or whatever, you know, the Saudi Arabia thing.
Mm-hmm.
They could always find a good reason for it. But I don't really know what they were hoping to gain. I think what they hope to gain is this PR, you know. And this guy, Bill Mukhtar guy, is now one of the most wanted terrorists in the world. So he's the new bad guy, so to speak, at least in some countries.
How does this relate to things like who's behind it? I mean, do you think there is a particular government funding this secretly, like Saudi Arabia, or
no.
Is this just group?
I think this is AQIM, Al-Qaeda in Maghreb, and affiliated organizations. Affiliated could be previous members, it could be current members. This guy who has claimed responsibility, and I think he could be the one who's responsible for it, for planning it out.
Yeah.
He's been involved with Algerian civil war in the 90s, and he used to be one of the leaders of AQIM as well. So I do believe him when he says he's responsible for it. But if you're asking if there are other powers behind it, I don't think so. But of course, there could be speculations going west, east and west, you know, just like where there was, you know, with 9/11, that is just basically an inside job.
Yeah. Conspiracy theories. You think it's the same?
Yeah. They will always flourish. I don't believe in them unless I see some, you know, real hard
evidence.
Proof. Yeah.
What kind of plant was this?
Oh, the plant in this area is a gas installation, sort of one of the biggest gas installations.
Is that natural gas, or is it a refinery for oil, or do you know?
Natural gas.
Okay, so do you think there was any, or is there evidence that oil was behind this, or gas was behind this? You know, that's always, I always hear that's, whenever you talk about foreigners intervening in Africa or the Middle, or anywhere where there's oil,
yeah.
People around here always say, oh, well, everything's about oil. It's all about the money. Do you think this is that?
How could it be that? I mean, in what sense could it be? Are you saying maybe oil interests could be behind this so that the oil, gas price could go up?
I have no idea. That's been when I talk to people about it, most Americans know nothing, of course. But that's what they'll say is, oh, yes, they're fighting. It's always about oil. We want their oil, so we're fighting. The French want the oil, so they're taking over Mali again, and then these terrorists are fighting back because, you know, they're
The Islamists themselves are saying that, you know, the reason why France is going into Mali is not to support the Mali government at all, but just to make sure that they have access to whatever natural resources Mali has.
Right.
I think that's a wild goose, so to speak, because of course you could say that anything going on, you know, even the U.S. bust with the U.S. economy is planned by some group of people with wild powers who, you know, the Wittenberg dinner or something, you know, that they're all planning it out, you know. I guess I respect that people have that opinion, but I don't. I think in this case, it's just not that complicated. In this case, it's a matter of terrorists wanting to make a statement, to gain internal powers within the AQIM, and Belmokhtar certainly did that. I guess he is a hero. This is what makes me the most sick. In Norway, you also have Norwegians born in Norway who have parents, for instance, from Pakistan. And one of those guys some days ago on Facebook said he really praised this attack on the gas installation, and saying that it was great, and fight against the infidels and so on. It really makes me sick, and because it's so personal. So 9/11, far away. I was pretty young. I was 23 years old. But I saw it, and then you had 22nd of July here in Norway, which was much closer in my own country. I knew people who died, but I didn't know anyone themselves. And now suddenly it's my own uncle who is being used as a pawn in some guy's PR plan.
So you don't really see any, since the guy that shot all the kids in Norway was... That had nothing to do with Al Qaeda. You're just sort of putting all the terrorist acts into one bucket, regardless of who does it. Yeah,
I mean, extremism is extremism, whether it's communism, like Soviet style communism, Gulag, or ultra capitalism in Latin America, where, you know, Chile and so on. I don't care who does it. I don't care, you know, what kind of justification they have. They are still killing other people.
Yeah, see, that's one thing I find curious here in the United States is we have so many of these mass shootings almost every week. And they're like, they never, on the news and the government, they never use the word terrorism with that. Because then we would have to, I guess, have a war on that kind of terrorism too, which we don't. So that's just sort of not considered terrorism when, you know, somebody shoots 5 and 6 year old children, but it's terrorism when maybe, you know, 5 adults get killed overseas in an embassy. And I often wonder why is that, you know? And then it's so weird because we have people that defend, I feel like people are defending those terrorist acts by saying, you know, assault weapons should not be banned. You know, it's like half the country isn't even fighting it. What do you think about that?
I think I agree with you, and I think there are many things on this. It's like the difference between, you remember after Katrina, you had a picture of a black man taking away some goods from a store, looter or pillager or whatever. A white family doing the same. I don't remember the exact phrase, but the phrase was very different. The phrase was gathering necessary food or whatever, you know. There's a lot of analysis on that, but I think it's very pretty clear that that two similar incidents could have two very different meanings depending on where you are in the spectrum of politics or whatever, you know. So. This guy attacking 20 plus children at a school is something we can just battle by making sure that schools have more guns, while others think that, you know, this is actually could be an ideological attack or something. In my point of view, terrorism is somewhat linked with ideology in an extreme sense. So I don't think that some guy who kills three people on the street because they owe him money is terrorism, but you know, violence. Another guy might kill the local priest of an opposing religion or whatever because he hates them.
Or the abortion doctor, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I think, you know, but we all of us have to be really careful with how we label things. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's definitely terrorism. It's definitely they're trying to justify it by different means. I don't buy that justification. Just because, just like I don't buy the justification of killing 80 youths on an island. But what is really worrying me about all of this is, okay, what now? So let's say that Western oil installations in around the world, Nigeria, Algeria, you know, many countries have oil interests, Western companies like my own company, Statoil. What if we just make sure that, you know, we have more armed guards? What then? You know, what kind, how would that affect things in Nigeria or in Algeria and other places? Another question I ask myself all the time is risk versus reward. Definitely, it was clear in Norwegian, you know, the Norwegian embassy in Algeria last year and 2 years ago that there was a rising risk of terrorism in Algeria. It was well known within, you know, the diplomatic circles, but at the same time, the Norwegian oil workers were still there, you know.
Did your uncle know? Did he feel that he was at risk there?
I didn't talk with him about it, and I don't want to speculate, but yeah, I guess so. I mean, you don't go to a gas installation just a few miles out of Libya. You don't do that without thinking there's a risk. I mean, of course there's a risk. That's also why, you know, the pay of these people is so high, as high as it is. And Statoil knew quite well what was going on in Libya in 2 years ago with the amount of guns coming out of Libya after the revolution there. So, risk versus reward. And then this time around, it really went wrong.
I guess I'll just say, instead of pretending that I have a sort of question coming from one point of view, I'll just tell you mine, which sure. is, you know, I did some work in Paris for about 7 months editing a show for RT, which was not, you know, Max and Stacey's show, Karma Bank, I call it, but that's the Kaiser Report. So I don't have, that show was just contracted through AP, so I don't have any direct knowledge of the inner workings of RT, except that I know that they were allowed to say pretty much whatever they wanted to. But what I find lately, and I was praising RT left and right when I was working for them, because I started watching them and I saw, oh my God, they're reporting on things I never see reported in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, they show the videos of the Palestinians or the Israeli soldiers like punching old Palestinian women in the face and throwing rocks at them. Well, what I've started to realize now is I've almost had a 180 on that opinion, because I see that I see RT, and RT is very much like the media hero, in the same way Democracy Now! Is, of the progressives in the United States. I can't, people are watching RT saying, yes, this is our voice, this is what's going on. And a lot of it, I think, is good. You know, they do a lot of reporting in the United States that we don't hear. But then again, if you look at the big picture, I see a very successful propaganda machine that is working with Putin's interest against the United States.
Oh, yeah.
And every time. And what I'm afraid of is that the progressives basically will believe whatever RT wants them to believe.
Well, this is a really dangerous situation because actually today or yesterday in a Norwegian newspaper, I think I'll scan it to maybe send you some information on that later. There's a this is common knowledge, I guess, but they did an experiment here in Norway where they took one right-wing guy who is really believing that there's no global warming and so on. And they had, on the other hand, they had a young woman who's the leader of pro-environment group, mm-hmm. and they had those two with their Google profiles on their laptops, both typing in things like global warming. Mm-hmm. So whereas the right-wing guy, he, you know, after the usual suspects of Wikipedia and so on, after that, he found on Google, on the front page, first page of Google results, he found pages more or less corresponding with his own view. Mm-hmm. Whereas the young woman, she got, you know, the colored eyeglasses, compared, you know, according to her own point of view. Mm-hmm. So he got links to skeptics, you know, saying that there's no global warming. She got reports, she got hits to reports saying there is a global warming and we need to do something now and so on. And a really quite profound quote, she said, "With this situation, it's not strange at all that we have so much difficulty talking together because each of us are listening to whatever confirms our own point of view." So you have the RT, the Al Jazeera English, and a few others, which is, you know, doing one spin on things, objectively or less objectively. And then you have Fox News. So, you know, I'm really much in favor of the internet. I'm really much in favor of the you know, customization of your newsfeed and so on. Mm-hmm. But I think it's so dangerous when people are, you know, latching on to one or two or three maybe news organizations, which are, these are the ones we believe in. So if you say, I believe more in RT and Al Jazeera English than I believe in CNN, ABC and Fox News. Mm-hmm. And I think you're sort of, the scenario which you paint is really quite dangerous because Putin and RT, I don't know how strong that linkage is, but there might be a linkage.
Oh, it's directly linked. I mean, there, it's RT is state-owned media. I mean, it is...
state-owned? Yeah. It's hilarious.
See, and they don't... You don't really see that in their marketing, but it is absolutely 100% state-owned. And everything that... You know, and if Putin doesn't like what you're saying, you will get fired. I don't have direct evidence of that, but I know somebody who does, who's been trying, you know, that had to do with reporting on the Georgia situation and this sort of thing. If Putin doesn't like what goes out on RT, you get fired. I mean, everybody knows how Putin operates. And and RT is owned 100% by the Russian government, and RT America is as well. And that's why I get so bothered that, you know, you have them come on, they complain about every last little thing that the U.S. does wrong. But then what happened just the other day, and this made me so mad, you know, the Russians came out with some horrible ruling about that you can't talk about gay people because of the children. You know, you get fined lots of money if you make a comment about the gay lifestyle. One way or the other, in the
really?
Yes, this is brand new, and so I look on RT because I always get mad at this, you know, when I start to blow up, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to look at RT's coverage because you know the U.S. does one thing with copyright or something, and you know, and it's just everywhere, and all their commentators are following along with it. So the only thing I find is really a apart from a barely, you know, a factual kind of blurb, was an editorial of the guy saying, well, you know, the United States are complaining that this is anti-gay when look at, everyone's coming out left and right, you know, making a big deal about it. And there is some point, basically he's validating, saying there is some point because, you know, why we have to be careful about what we expose our children to and let them make their own decisions. You know, and I thought, how ridiculous is RT actually found a way to justify blatantly hateful, you know, homophobia. And this, I feel very frustrated by this, because I think, like, a lot of progressives just say, we don't trust the mainstream media at all, so we need to find somebody we trust. And
the thing is, the thing with trust is that trust can be abused and, you know, kick your ass before you know it. You know, so me, for instance, during this crisis, I had my Twitter feeds, my search, my sort of my search columns on TweetDeck. And I always had to be really careful with what I even began thinking about, you know, being valid information. And what I saw was that even Reuters was, you know, copying whatever ANI was saying, and ANI was a source, you know, close to the terrorists. Things, I don't remember this. I have some screenshots of it. I took screenshots. I think I took about 600 screenshots during the whole 10-day ordeal, just from news stories and things on the phone, because I wanted to sort of capture for myself the snapshots of those seconds. Because an analysis we also have here in Norway is that basically the news reporting is not historically correct, and we need to always remember that in the situation, that whatever comes out of this second from BBC, from RT, from others, is, first of all, a spur of the moment. Second of all, it could also be a sort of editorial line. Editorial line, in your example, is just perfect, because it's a perfect example of, you know, this comment being, I think, you know, based upon the news channel being owned by the states of Russia.
And it's not that anybody's saying you can't criticize Russia, but I think that the undertone is very strong. And the other thing is, and you talk about the it seems to me like Kent Bye used to do that show, The Echo Chamber, that project where it was all about people being in their own little echo chamber where they only hear the news they want to hear. And I think this is like what you describe as sort of the new and improved echo chamber where it's all done automatically. And I find that very frustrating too. I use a news aggregator called Zeit, which I really like because it sort of puts everything together on the iPad in sort of a newspaper format, and you see the stories based on things you say check or minus, like a TiVo.
Okay.
And, but I find it like I almost have to trick the algorithm to see opposing points of view, and that's very frustrating because I'm not afraid of opposing point of view, and it's almost like all these search engines are based on the fact that people are scared of the opposing point of view and they will run away from whatever they're reading, because and just switch the channel because they can't bear to see it, and that's very common, and that's something I think in people's minds.
It's dangerous. I mean, if you take this to its logical conclusion, you end up in a very dangerous place, I think, because then suddenly you could have even within one society, within one city, you could have people whose echo chamber is so strong that they have no understanding of the other point of view.
And see, I think what you describe as the logical end is what's happened here in the United States and probably other places, because I think that's why we're so bipolar, you know, here. And I think a lot of people don't understand it, but it seems that if you look at it in this way, it does make sense. It's like, why are people, you know, we're modern society, we vote, we're democracy, we ended slavery. Why aren't people closer together? Why are we more and more apart? And I think this explains it in a very big way. I mean, not completely, of course, because there's always other factors. There's one example I wanted to mention, too, of this related to the RT thing. The show that we recorded at RT was actually done at AP, sort of contracted by AP. You know, obviously RT doesn't have studios everywhere, and many networks do this, you know, the Chinese television, all this. So I was sitting there in the office, we're waiting to use the studio because it was being used by somebody else, and I asked, you know, the engineer, I said, who's using the studio now? They're speaking this. She said, oh, that's the Voice of America. They're doing a report on, I don't know, Libya or something. That's the VOA. He said, yeah, we have to wait for them to finish. And I said, oh, my God, that's so funny. So you mean the propaganda voice for United States is goes on right before the propaganda voice for Russia in the same exact room.
Yeah.
But they looked at me like they were so shocked that I would say this. Like, are you saying that RT is propaganda? I'm like, of course it is. How do you not know this? And that's, it was baffling. And the, you know, it was weird.
Mm. So for me, let's try to put this back to the sort of the West versus the West story. So there is this Huffington Class of Civilizations meme, which is quite strong, I'm afraid. What do you think will happen between Al-Qaeda and the West?
I'm sorry, I missed that. The Huffington what meme?
The Huffington, the Clash of Civilizations.
Well, see, I don't know anything about that.
Oh, my God. If you don't know about that, then you need to...
I turned off Huffington Post a few years ago.
It's not Huffington. It's Huntington.
Oh, Huntington.
Yeah. His name is Samuel P. Huntington, who in 1993 in Foreign Affairs had an article called The Clash of Civilizations, which is a response to Fukuyama's book, The End of History and the Last Man. Mm-hmm. So my question to you was... What do you think will happen ahead 5 to 10 years between organized Islamist organizations like Al-Qaeda and the West, America, Britain, France, European Union?
Oh, my answer to that is, first of all, I don't know. And secondly, my other answer to that is very sort of American and almost, I don't know, stereotypical, which is that I really feel like the bad guy always loses, whoever that is. And if terror is, as you described, just this evil with no purpose, then it will lose. But I question that. We haven't talked about this too, as far as, well, what about the fact that, you know, we send drones all over the place and kill people very indiscriminately and lots of kids die, you know, like, is that terrorism? I don't know. So I guess my answer to that is, A, the bad guys will lose in the long term, in the big picture, because that's the way that I just feel like that's just sort of the way of things. That's how evolution works. And maybe I'm naive. But my other question is, if that's true, who are the bad guys? Or are we all bad guys?
My answer to your two questions, which were sort of a statement. First statement was the bad guy always loses. Maybe in the very, very, very big scale of things. But it doesn't work always like that.
Yeah.
In the war might last 200 or 300 years. And the war might be the North versus the South.
Yeah.
It could be the Christianity versus Islam. It could be all kinds of stupid things. Within those larger stories, which is a span of a very long time, you have the personal tragedies.
Yes.
Where my uncle was butchered by Islamists in Algeria.
Yeah.
Where maybe in 5 years someone you know might be killed because of something.
Right.
And you might say the bad guy always loses at the end, but the bad guy is not the bad guy. The bad guy is an ideology. The bad guy is a way of doing things. The bad guy is a perspective. The second statement was the question, who is the bad guy? I was following the drones situation the last days, and I think it's great that the United Nations will later this year investigate the use of drones in Pakistan and elsewhere. I think it's great. And if it is found that the U.S. has been using it in ways it shouldn't be used, I hope the U.S. will get a slap on the wrist, and I hope the U.S. will improve their way of doing things. But to be honest, I don't think they will. I think what will happen is that one finds that there has been too much collateral damage, meaning in the goal of exterminating Taliban in northwestern Pakistan, too many innocent lives were lost. I think the U.S. will say, well, that's a shame. and that's it, you know.
Yeah.
You could label things all kinds of ways. There are, you know, neo-Nazis who only point at the amount of German lives, innocent lives, who were lost during the bombardment of Germany in the last months of the Second World War. And you might say that in the large scale of things, the bad guys lost. You know, the Nazi Third Reich is gone. But in that larger scale, there are human tragedies which we also have to see. And my hope with social media, my hope, especially with video blogging those years ago, mm-hmm. was that finally we would have windows into the lives of very different people.
Yes.
That was why I was so engaged with the Vlog Europe and going to the first VlogCon in 2005 and being in that scene for so long, because I really hoped that finally we would have a means for doing this. But what happened was that you have a cacophony of a million people on YouTube all wanting to be stars. Mm-hmm. You have all of the shows of Clip TV and sort of editorial change of how things are done there, which I don't know even what I think about, what I feel about it. But we have too few real windows to people living in places like Algeria. We find it if there's a tragedy there and then some person has a webcam and that person is maybe interviewed by BBC, and then that's the 5 minutes of fame of that person. Mm-hmm. But if you as an outsider really want to go deeper into things and really want to understand the lives of people who are living in a village in northwestern Pakistan, there's no way for me to find that.
But do you think it exists? It's just not. It's just hard to find, or we don't know. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, because we are using our filters. Even I am. You know, we are using our sources of information, and those sources are not necessarily really good at going new places. Which is why I love what Bicycle Mark is doing with his sort of reporting the underreported news. And I hope he will make a great career. You know, coming decades doing that, and I hope more people would do like him. And today, technologically, you can.
Yes.
But the question is, you know, what is the monetary, scheme? What is the way you could make that work?
I think the medium is relevant here, because for me, like I think what you describe as not, like, it's very hard to do what you say with video. Yes, that's true. To get, you know, what it's like from the standpoint of a person living in some village in Pakistan in his video. But when you look at Twitter, I think, does a very good job of it. But granted, it's only 140 words or less. So to me, and so that's like, I think it has to do with the medium. And personally, I've pretty much abandoned video as a medium because I feel like it is it's the best medium to propagandize with. For various reasons, which I don't think I need to go into. And the other reason is because it's just so, well, for the same reason, really, which is just that it's just so easy to watch. You don't have to think. It's how people can implant thoughts in your head. Whereas I think with text and with audio, where I prefer to be, in audio in particular, is that, you know, you have the opportunity, it invites and encourages critical thinking. I don't know why it's so different from audio versus video in that regard, but I feel that it definitely is. And there's very little in my mind to go against that. You know, there's so many shows I listen to, like In Our Time, for example, or shows, you know, where they discuss things, and I find my brain really engaged. Whereas if I'm watching some show, for example, I saw a show, Forks Over Knives, which is about how veganism is so good for you, and you come out thinking, wow, I have to be a vegan, because they present it so well, not the other point of view. I just find that I just think video is kind of done for me personally. It's become this gigantic, commercialized ball of shit, for lack of a better way to describe it. I don't know.
I see a point. I really do. I think a lot of this actually also has to deal with technological literacy.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it also one of the key issues here is how to make better filters. So a filter, not something close to what I feel, but a filter that says, let's find the opposites.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, you talked earlier about, you know, almost hacking the parameters on some new service to sort of get the other point of view of things.
Right.
If personally, me, Raymond, I'd be so happy if I found a way to go for the minus, you know, minus X, minus whatever right. they did in Algeria was just blood slaughter right. and, you know, terrorism.
But again, that's very easy to do on Twitter. And I think that's part of why Twitter has remains as strong as it has. Because on Twitter, you just subscribe to individuals or you subscribe to ideas. That's why Twitter is really the only place where I can subscribe to people easily, find out what's going on sort of right-wing people's mind. And I subscribe to people who I think are right-winged, but not personal and crazy, but more ideological.
Yeah.
And those are generally people I respect and can listen to. Mm. I Facebook, forget it. You know, it's all automatic. Google, automatic, but and YouTube, certainly. But at least on Twitter, I can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely check out Twitter more. I've been using it a lot in this process. I think I agree with you. Twitter is much better than Facebook and Google Plus in so many regards. Because of the shortness, you know, you can just scan through things, you can get quicker, and then of course you have the links to longer things.
Yeah.
But I just don't know how to move on from here. I think the loss, which is, you know, very deep and personal,
mm-hmm.
is clouding my thinking somewhat, because I'm just so outraged that someone thinks they can go and kill someone because of some ideology.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what it is. And to use, you know, whoever people were in that area at that time as their means towards their PR goal. I never understood it, but now it's like more of a war. I really want to fight against it.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to even begin doing that. For the last 2 years, I've been involved with a small organization here in Norway, which is building homeschools for girls in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe one thing which could come out of this is that I renew my own strength and my involvement in that, because I really think education, as in also being able to listen to the opposing point of view, is what is needed here. We need education. We need education within, you know, the developing world, so that, you know, they don't see the rest as just, you know, the rest as being those filthy bastards who go there and, you know, grab their natural resources and pay no taxes to the government, you know. But, you know, see people in other countries as individuals, because that's what we need to do.
I've always been a pacifist, but I find as I get older, it's harder to be. But at the same time, I still am at heart. You know, I grew up with, you know, constant reminders of the fact that my grandparents lost pretty much all of their relatives in the Holocaust. And I've always, and I really look at war, I guess, the same way as terrorism, in that, and in the same way as the death penalty. I just think the idea that somebody can take another person's life to actually end another person's existence is so phenomenally wrong. And all you have to do is ponder it for about a minute, that it makes me so sick for humanity that so many people can't even take that minute to ponder what it means to no longer exist and to take that away from somebody else.
Mm.
It absolutely boggles my mind, which is why I don't really understand war. You know, I don't. I understand, but at the same time, I understand that when people do stuff to you, you have to do something to stop it.
Mm.
And I that's, for me, has been the ultimate sort of mystery my whole life is what do you do with that? And then I look at the universe and the Big Bang, and I think, well, the whole damn thing's pretty violent. So You know, how much of it do we just have to accept and how much do we actually try and change? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, well, I guess, you know, that's, my last question is why you actively reach out to me as soon as this happened. And I'm just curious as to why you wanted to, what was your motivation for wanting to sort of talk about this?
To be very honest, I just wanted to talk with someone about it.
Okay.
Because, on a very personal level, the last years, I have been focusing on work, more work and more work, building a career here in Norway, which is I enjoy. I enjoy working a lot. And then politics, local, and then family. And I wanted to talk with someone who is far away, and someone I respect, and someone who can maybe give me some different ideas, which you did, and have a conversation. Because I like conversations, even though I don't do them much these days, these years.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, okay. It's very simple.
Me too. Actually, it's helpful to me too, because I, you know, I have veered far, much further away from the political than I used to. Probably starting when Obama was in office, because I didn't feel as big an enemy as I needed to. And so for me, when you asked to do something serious, for me it was a big switch. Like, can I do something serious again? It's been forever. But I used to do that. So it's been helpful to me to sort of find my, I don't know what the word is.
Do you have any conclusions from this? I mean, for me, it's very hard to have conclusions, but I do think that a growing theme for me is the danger of having opinions only close to your own presented to you.
Yes, I think that is definitely true. The idea of the automated media chamber and it getting worse, you know, is something important that we've discussed about, and also the medium, going to the earlier discussion, the idea of terrorism is just a pathology, and maybe we don't need to think about the reasons so much. And I think, especially on progressive side, you know, there was a lot of people here, probably including me, that said, you know, 9/11 shouldn't be a surprise. You know, we had it coming. You know, that sort of idea, as opposed to, look, terrorism is just wrong, period. But then as soon as I start thinking about that, then I think about, well, what about what we do? What about war? Is that terrorism just because you have a military doing it? So I guess, yes, that's no conclusions. I think the conclusions about the technology are easier to make and more definitive. I think that I never really thought about the differences between, like, the social networks like Google and Google Plus and Facebook sort of making decisions for us versus services like Twitter that just give us information. Like Twitter and Wikipedia to me are the best because, you know, I ask for something and it gives me the information and it's designed in such a way to be as non-biased as possible.
There's no automatic filter,
right?
You know, making it customizable for you.
Right. So maybe we just need to be able to turn those filters off. I don't know. But I love Facebook in that it lets me talk to my friends. I don't really use Google Plus at all because they pissed me off. You know, when I was on there like 2 weeks and they shut off all my Google services because they didn't think I was a real person or something.
Oh, yeah, that's funny.
So
the whole real name discussion.
Yeah, so I turned that off basically. You know, I was starting to migrate to a Google phone number and I just said, fuck this. I'm not going to be reliant on Google because they can shut me off. So that's done for me and I don't know. Yeah.
I think I would like to blog again, but I have no idea when and how and what kind of theme. But the sort of the old "don't lose the question" meme, because the question here is many things, and one of the questions for me really is the face of terror.
Yeah.
The face of terrorism. And maybe expose the doublespeak of terrorists because they claim to be so holy and wanting to do, you know, to follow the Quran or whatever. But in reality, they're smuggling drugs. They are smuggling, luxury goods. They are killing other people and you know, just using religion as a cheap excuse. And on the same, you know, with extreme Christians and, you know, Hindus and Buddhists and, you know, so on. But then again, on the other hand, I'm like, fuck that. You know, I will have my personal grievance with my uncle for my uncle, mm-hmm. and then, you know, just continue with my family, my work, and my career, and, you know, making some money so that I can donate to where the courses like, you know, your own show and, you know, Basic Remark and others, so that you can do great stuff. Because with this technology now, and Kickstarter and all of those things, it's very easy, actually, to support something.
Yes.
And it's amazing. And I think I sponsored two projects on Kickstarter. And it's just, I mean, it's really, really great, because we can micro payments and all of those things, you know. So maybe one of the things I would explore is, you know, micro payments for good content, which challenges us, because we need to challenge ourselves and see the other side. One of the things I would love to hear is the voice of someone who lost a family member to drones from America.
Well, they do have those types of interviews on Democracy Now. I've heard them.
Okay.
Yeah, a few times. But they have an agenda too. But their storytelling is also very good. So,
at the end of the day, I don't think I really care about the agenda. Mm-hmm. As long as the storytelling is good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I don't like Fox News, because whenever I watch it, I don't really see any good storytelling.
Yeah.
It's all just, you know, hyperbole, mm-hmm. which, you know, makes me upset. So that's why I turned that off, you know. Yeah. But maybe I'm discarded by my own judgment as well.
No, I think that's true. But then we also have CSNBC or MSNBC, whatever it's called here, which is kind of turning into the opposite it's like the progressive version of it.
Okay.
Like you have Rachel Maddow, who is, you know, has some great information, and she's very charismatic, but, you know, it's still propaganda. You know, she says she'll make whatever logic she needs to make the point that she wants to make.
That's funny.
And that's,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, you don't seem like you're being, I mean, obviously you've had a traumatic thing happen, but I don't hear that it's changing your logic all that much. I mean, your logic seems pretty
well. That's actually very important to me. I saw a psychologist or shrink or whatever to call it, and the first time this week. Mm-hmm. Just to end off, you can publish this if you want or not. You know, I don't care. But I had a dream this week, Monday night, and that dream was my nightmare, because in that dream I was in a sort of airship, like a balloon, and then you have like the platform under it, and then I was standing on the platform. I was alone, and under me was the raging ocean, and the wind was taking the balloon wherever, you know, the balloon went. I had no control, and then things like a scissor started to attack me. So, you know, that and a hook, and, you know, so the environment started to attack me. And then the balloon went first sideways, like Titanic, and then upside down. And I did whatever I could to cling on to my ship, you know, my reality, my sort of, because my fear, my deep sort of almost Freudian fear, is that I will suddenly start not only hating Islamists, but starting to really hate people like Muslims across the street, because they look like extremists. Long beard, women in hijab, you know. Mm. Not only hijab, but the whole sort of where you only see the eyes thing.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing those individuals as expression of the kind of ideology that killed my uncle. Mm-hmm. So I really try very hard to cling on to, above all, individualism, that, you know, any man's personal story is worth telling, even if it's the opposite view than your own, and even if that person lived in a country which is your enemy, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, for me it's very important not to hate. Even people that it's just, I don't find it effective. Whether it's even, you know, especially with politics, you know, like there's a lot of right-wing people who I actually don't hate, and some of them I like. Like, I kind of like Newt Gingrich, and people think I'm crazy, but I kind of like the way he speaks his, the way he speaks his mind, and he's not afraid to have an alternative point of view, even though I disagree with it. You know, and that, I'm more looking for people that are being honest with themselves than people that are saying what they need to say in order to meet some formula that their press person said, you know, in focus groups.
Yeah, exactly.
Did I first meet... I first met you at Vlog Europe 1, though, right? In New York?
Yeah, the first one in Amsterdam.
Okay.
And I remember our discussion back then.
Oh, the first one was...
One of the discussions we had as a group, it was video blogging for our grandchildren. And you know what's what has happened now in these how many years? Eight. A lot of the video blogging friends I have, including myself, my own archive is gone.
Mine is too.
8 years.
Yeah, mine too. Because everyone who I trusted, every host I used, basically deleted it eventually. The only, you know which ones are still alive? The ones I hosted myself, and I still have those. And fortunately, I still have master tapes of pretty much everything I created. But that is very interesting and horrible.
And and we were talking back then of video blogging for grandchildren, which is, what, lifespan? 40 years? 50 years?
Yeah.
And I think what we have done is basically dig our own graves.
Yeah.
And I think it's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, people think just because it's digital and there's so much space out there that it will just stay there forever, but it's not true. I mean, there are videos that I watched 10 years ago that I cannot find to save my life.
Exactly. Same
because
for me.
It's that automatic filter.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that lesson is just host your own stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe
so
expensive.
I have my archive, but... that's also why I didn't use YouTube much or BlipTV much. I used it a bit, but dltq.org/media and dltq.org/media2, AVI files or MPEG-4, whatever QuickTime format it was, you know, tons of videos. But the WordPress installation is gone because, of course, virus. So
yes.
I have dltq.org, the old one, with tons of things. It's gone. You know, I only have the database stuck somewhere, but I don't know what to do with it. So, I have the database with all the with all the spam comments.
Well,
but
if you have the database, you can still fix it. You'd have to find an old installation of WordPress.
I guess I can still fix it, but yeah. Personally, I can't. So I need to hire someone to do it
exactly.
For me or whatever.
Well, that's the same reason why I haven't fixed my stuff. Because yes, I have a lot of the media, but am I going to sit there and recreate 1,000 posts? When
exactly? Hilarious. And the same with EvoVlog. EvoVlog had, I think, 2,000 posts.
Yeah.
But it's gone. You know, the site is gone. It's just, you know, if you visit the site with the Chrome, it says, warning, virus, you know.
Yeah.
But I still have the database, the WordPress database somewhere, but I have no idea how to...
That was a fun site. That's probably the one I missed the most.
Mm.
That was so
and
fun.
I think... That's something which I could actually, you know, want to invest some time at least some dollars into, you know, having someone fix it for me, because part of this, there was something there. It was ugly and chaotic, but there was something between the lines of that kind of conversation which I enjoyed a lot.
To me it was a working anarchist organization, functional. And I liked it, you know. And despite the chaos and the disorder, there was an order that worked about it. It was comprehensible, if that's the word. I don't know.
Do you remember the categories we invited? All, you know, 400 categories.
Yeah, there were a lot.
And then you chose whatever category. You went down the list, and sort of subconsciously you pick totally random category which said something about the post, which you didn't say in the post, but which you, after you had written it, you used the category as a label to say, you know, it could be anything. And I miss that. And I see some people have, you know, I see some other people doing it in, you know, people I know and people I don't know. And I think that's really something I treasure, you know.
With your caress, sweet lotus blossom, lotus blossom.
Everything is passing. It all passes.